Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week?
Pretty good, Jim. Feel better after a win. Definitely a convincing one at that. How are you feeling?
I feel like crap. I have the worst cold in the world. I'm going to be just mucus, sore throat, hacking away. So be prepared for that, Steve. You may have to carry the load.
Well, I'm just glad that we're talking virtually. But as you know, I have two boys under three, so I am probably at this point relatively immune to everything because you are never as sick in your life, I guess, from the moment you were in preschool to when your kids start preschool.
I understand. I wasn't exposed to kids, but somehow I picked this up. Hopefully, though, I'll be healthy in a couple days. A reminder, Tuesday night, that's the 24th. We're going to be doing a live show from the cafe in downtown State College. Rogers Alexander will be with us, former Penn Stater. We're going to have lots of fun. Live show, some great food specials, drink specials. We're going to have Pulp Daddy, Hazy IPA beer. It's going to be a great time. That is Tuesday evening, 6 o'clock. We'll get started. Get in earlier. Say hello. And during the show, we're even going to take questions from the audience, so you even get a chance to be part of the show. We're looking forward to it. That's Tuesday, the 24th, and I promise to be healthier than I am right now, Steve. All right. We had the 56-0 game against Kent State. And before we get started in talking about the game itself, I think I hear talk from people, why are you scheduling this kind of game? And I've been one of those who hate these out-of-conference, total mismatch type of games, which this is. But you and I were chatting before we got started. Kent State, they are a MAC team. We saw what MAC teams could do a couple weeks ago. Bowling Green stayed with Penn State. Northern Illinois took Notre Dame down. Kent State just happens to be a really bad MAC team this year.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely saw a severe disparity in terms of talent there. Although, I mean, Kent State, I'm a little biased because my cousin played there a long time ago. But it's a program with a proud tradition. I mean, for those of you that can't see, I'm wearing a Steelers shirt. So I think of James Harrison and Jack Lambert. And I think of a lot of the coaches that came out of there, Nick Saban, Lou Holtz. I think you could have had all those people present yesterday, and I'm not sure it would have made much of a difference. But, yeah, I mean, the good takeaway that I saw this week compared to 2 weeks ago was that Penn State clearly played the way they were supposed to play, in the sense that the outcome was never in doubt. And that was, I guess, one of the concerns, you know, had at the Bowling Green game. But there are always some nitpicky things. But, you know, in general, it was a dominant performance, both sides of the ball. I think the only potentially serious injury I saw was to Cam Wallace. I don't know what the status of his it looked like, an ankle injury based on the replay. But that's really, I think, what you want to accomplish. And, you know, I know it's maybe not the most exciting game to watch as a fan when it's just so lopsided. But to get some of these younger players some, you know, live experience in front of the Beaver Stadium crowd, I think that's valuable. Again, I know just from watching it, it's tough to see from a fan perspective when the game is just, again, so one-sided. But I was encouraged about some of the things we saw from some of the younger players that we didn't see, that we don't really get often much of a chance to see on the closer games.
You're right. This is an opportunity to get those players in the game. I love the four-game rule that doesn't burn your red shirt. Someone brought this up that postseason games don't count. I don't know if the conference championship game is one of those that counts or doesn't, but if you make the playoffs and make it to the finals, you could have someone play like 8 or 9 games and still maintain their red shirt.
Well, and by that point, you know, through the end of the year, that there's going to be a big maturation process for those guys that just stepped on, not only in the weight room, but at that point, the game hopefully has slowed down for them a little bit. And you could see some meaningful contributions from some of those younger players. So it's one of the few rules and changes that I actually give the NCAA credit for. It's not often that that happens, but this is one of the few things that they've done right, in my opinion.
That's right. I'm with you. I'm always hesitant to give the NCAA credit for anything, but this is a rule that I do like, which is you can play up to four games and not burn your red shirt. It's a great rule. Where you had years past, someone literally could come in for one play on a kickoff and they lose their red shirt year. It's just not right. So very grateful that they have the four game rule. So let's talk about the game itself. 56-0 final. They tacked on that last touchdown at the end, which helps those degenerates who actually bet on this kind of game. We all know who you are. That would be me. I'm one of those degenerates. But let's going into this game, Steve, I think there were things that we talked about saying, you know what, we know it's going to be a mismatch, so what are the things we're going to look for? What were the things you were looking for, and did you see them?
Yeah, I saw more dominant performances, I think, on both lines, offense and defensive line. Again, there is a big talent disparity, but we're supposed to see that. I think that was a concerning thing with Bowling Green. You know, in terms of just how the game started, it was a little slow. But, you know, fortunately, Penn State sort of found the right gear, dominant performances all around. I was interested to see a new wrinkle in terms of Tyler Warren receiving the Wildcat formation. I know he's a former quarterback in high school. You know, I don't know that we're going to necessarily see that frequently moving forward, but just putting that on film to make teams like Illinois that's coming up sort of have to prepare that. In general, I thought Warren, as usual, is playing remarkable well. I mean, I haven't seen a tight end in the country that's more complete and playing better than he is at that caliber. One of the things I was looking to see, we talked a lot about, you know, is a third receiver going to step up? And I think we had two of the guys that we've, you know, heard a lot about, but hadn't really seen much. And that was Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming. Both caught multiple passes. I think Clifford even had a touchdown. And, you know, that's encouraging. Granted, I know it's against Kent State, but still just, you know, getting some confidence for them and for Clifford to have that confidence for them, I think is important moving forward. And then I know we're trying to see what the defense would look like without KJ Winston. I know that may have contributed to some of the struggles against Bowling Green. Again, I know Kent State's offense performance, you know, was what it was, but I didn't see any serious miscues there. And I think that's, you know, encouraging sign moving forward.
I'm with you. There were a few things that I was looking for. You mentioned Tyler Warren was something we hadn't seen yet this year, which was Tyler Warren at quarterback. And it was interesting. The first time he was set up in the Wildcat, he ran the ball successfully. In fact, what was it? I have it here somewhere. Tyler Warren, 16 yards with the carry. Second time he throws the ball, throws a touchdown pass. I was a little surprised that they had him throw the ball. I thought it would have been more effective, Steve, to show him playing the Wildcat, run the ball, make the next opponent see that on film, but don't show him throwing the ball.
I guess maybe I would disagree there. I think just the fact that you put that on the film, something else to, you know, have to consider. I'm trying to remember a couple years ago in Penn State, I think it was a couple years ago when they played Auburn in Happy Valley, whether Warren threw a pass. I was at that game, and for some reason I have some vague recollection of that. But maybe that's misremembering on my part. It wasn't out of the Wildcat. I thought it was maybe a double pass. But regardless, again, you want to make – your opponent have to consider a lot of things. And I think that's another example of Kotelnicki, you know, really showing that he's a creative guy and putting other teams and their defense coordinators here in the conference on notice.
Yeah. My point about Tyler Warren, you know, just running the ball, not showing the pass. My point being, show something and then do something else off of it after you get it on film, which, hey, there could be still a lot more that can be done from that formation. So we'll like to see. But it's funny. It's been kind of a discussion point we've had on multiple shows here. And I think it was prompted by the Bowling Green game when people were talking about the defense and saying, oh, they just didn't want to show anybody else more on tape. They went vanilla as possible. And I'm like, I'm more the other way. Show them more. Make them have to think about it, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the Bowling Green game, which I'm sure a lot of people would prefer to forget, I'm more of your mindset where not worry about what you're showing the other team in terms of your defensive scheme. You know, just focus on winning and have a dominant performance and try to get those guys some rest so you can see sort of the players in waiting. What do you have in case you have some injuries and the light bumps and bruises through the course of the season that may have to accelerate the process and the learning curve for some of those guys?
As we're reviewing the Kent State game, Penn State 56, Kent State nothing on Saturday. There was one, if there was a negative to the game, it was again the penalty, Steve. And I think that's one of those things that we've seen in previous games too. And that's one I'm sure James Franklin wants to clean up.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are always going to be some things you can nitpick on. And I guess I'll take a moment to do that. In addition to some of the penalties, you know, starting the game, kicking the ball out of bounds, I mean, I don't care who you're playing. Like, that's just not the way you want to start the game. I don't know if there's really any excuse for that. And then, you know, I sort of add tackling again. I know Kent State didn't really rack up significant yardage, but still a lot of yards after the contact. And I think we'll talk more about who Penn State's playing this week in Illinois. And while that may be a problem, they can't really get that buttoned up in time for that matchup.
Yeah, I do. We do want to get to that with Penn State, Illinois coming up this week. The other thing to mention, you brought up that kicking the ball out of bounds. I always have this issue. They look to do that directional kick. They always want to kick it to the corner. Most teams, especially if you reach the end zone, they just down it, take it under 25. So why do they try so hard to get it so precise in the corner? I don't blame the kicker on this one, Steve. I blame the strategy.
Well, I think going back to NTA rule changes, I could be wrong. My understanding is that now you can fair catch a kickoff. So yes, the odds of anybody even returning a kick like that are so minimal. Just you have the leg, just kick it through the end zone and put your team out there in a position to win rather than yielding some significant sort of field advantage to your opponent. I mean, that's one of the reasons that Penn State sort of had the slower start was if you look at where they were starting the ball versus where Kent State was starting with the ball, it took a little while to overcome.
Exactly. That is it. All right. That is it for quarter one, Steve. We got lots more to go. We're going to pick it up. I have one more comment to make on the kicking. We're going to do that when we come back for quarter number two.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about Penn State's win over Kent State. And any criticism of the team this week probably is nitpicking, but that's our job. It's what we do. So we're talking about the opening kickoff that went out of bounds. You never want to see that. But what we were talking about was the nature of the game right now is, you know, to fair catch it. You can do that if the ball's in play also, besides it going into the end zone. But what I don't like, Steve, is that strategy of kicking it into the corner. Now, I understand you want to directionally kick for your coverage of it, but how about you know, left of center, okay? Not in the corner. And because you're inviting that to happen to kick it out of bounds. And the penalty, as you pointed out, I think is great enough that just kick it into the end zone. Just do that. That's all you need to do. So that was just my final point on that. I also was interested, we were talking in quarter number one about some of the young players that got into the game. And I didn't take note of everyone, but I was just, when I'd see a number that looked, hey, who's that, while at the game, I would look it up. And I saw, like, Don Lane, Dakari Nelson, Max Granville, Anthony Speca, Alonzo Ford. I know he's a transfer, not necessarily one of the young guys, but these were guys that I saw in the first half, even the first quarter of the game, which I thought was really great that they got experience while it was still a contest.
Well, I think several of those names you mentioned at least the beginning were linebackers. And I think that might be a preview of where we're headed this week with Illinois. Is my guess is you're going to see more of a traditional 4-3 with three linebackers trying to deal with that Illinois rushing attack. If Allen wants to play with two linebackers and a safety, I'd be really surprised if he does that. And if he does, I don't think he'll do it for very long. But I think maybe that might have been one of the reasons in trying to accelerate that process, particularly now with Winston's injury, to see sort of what you have and what different looks you can give Illinois coming up. The name that impressed me actually was Kevin Reynolds, I believe, the tight end, 87, made a really nice catch. There's been a lot of hope on him. And I remember the one tight end that was sort of the backup there to Warren, I believe he has an injury this year, Andrew Rapelier. So, you know, seeing that a guy like Reynolds continue this pipeline of really what's been one of the, I think, underappreciated and underrated, at least at a national level, continuations of this tight end position at Penn State, really going to the, not only excelling in the college ranks, but in the NFL.
Yeah, that's Luke Reynolds, number 85. Yeah. And it is, the tight end position has been one that I have been gaga over for years now. There seems to be every play, you know, whose turn is it? And obviously this is Tyler Warren's turn to be the lead dog there, but they keep replenishing. And a lot of folks were very high on Andrew Rapelier until he got hurt. Luke Reynolds, a guy that was very, very highly thought of. And I know Khalil Dinkins was dinged up a little bit, but he appears to be back and ready to play again. So, yeah, the tight end position is in very good hands. And, Steve, we've been doing some of the nitpicking for this game, which is tough to do. Some of the numbers in this game, and 56-0 is yes, things went your way. Things went well. But total yardage in this game, Penn State, 718 yards.
A record. State, it was like a 100-year record that stood. And 409 passing yards, and anybody who's a Penn State fan knows that 409 takes on some added significance. So I did want to highlight that.
That's true. Nice number to hit on that. Total of 718 yards. I think I read the record was against Susquehanna from many, 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 many moons ago. And on the other side, Kent State, a total of 67 yards. So yardage 718 to 67. Even with a little bit of the slow start, I think it was 7-0 only through one quarter. This was total domination. That's what you were looking for in this game, Steve.
It is, and that's what we saw. I mean, you know, I know they had the early pick there by Prabula coming in. Mistakes are going to happen. The guy for Kent State made a play, too. I don't necessarily have a problem with that, although we didn't really see Prabula much until the second half. I thought it was encouraging just because at that point, you know, with the game clearly in hand, to get a sense as to, you know, give him a bit of a rhythm. You know, in his defense, it's tough to just sort of come in there off the bench sporadically for one or two plays and come back out. And I thought he actually showcased more on the passing side when he had a little extended time to play. So that was another encouraging thing I took away from this game.
I think so also. And going into the game, when I set up the things that I was looking for, I wanted to see, I would have liked to have seen, say, Ethan Grunkmeyer get in and get a chance to throw the ball again. Just this situation where you just never know. The quarterback position is vulnerable. I don't want his first snap to be against Ohio State. You know, God forbid something happens. But with that said, you make a good point. This was the first time Bo Prabhula was allowed to go in there, get some rhythm going, you know, this season. I know a year ago we had the game where Drew Aller got dinged up a bit. So that was good to see. You mentioned his first pass, the interception, which stopped a nice drive. And it's funny to me, Steve, that I hear from fans and our listeners who were, oh, Bo Prabhula in there, thrown the interception. They're trying to get too cute. Then they bring in Tyler Warren, who throws a pass and it's a touchdown. Isn't it great we saw that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, look, Coach Olnicki's a creative guy. And there, when it's the creativity's working, then he has a lot of defenders. And when it's not, people are going to criticize him. That just comes with the job. But overall, I've been impressed with what I've seen, and particularly after what I would consider a lack of creativity under Yurcich the last few years. And look, one reason that I think you'd point to highlight while Coach Olnicki has been really, in my opinion, a good hire up to date is the fact that Kansas is really struggling without it. They had a pretty good quarterback last year that does not look nearly as good without Coach Olnicki. So I think, and that's just sort of, in my opinion, further evidence that he is somebody who is a value add.
There is no doubt about that. And we saw a few things. Again, the idea of on tape, we saw the formation where the entire offensive line, or practically the entire offensive line, lines up way to the left.
It forced them to call a timeout.
Yes. Totally irrelevant in this game, but those are the kind of things. And you like to think that, oh, that won't happen against the good teams, but it does. I remember, was it 2 years ago, Ohio State at home, you know, when Penn State came out with that short yardage formation where they have the T formation, and Ohio State just looked, what now? And they panic called the timeout.
Right, and those timeouts, particularly in the second half, can be pretty consequential. So, again, I wouldn't dismiss that. We've had a lack of creativity with Yurcich the past few years. So, again, I'm somebody who's trying to embrace it. Although at this point, you know, it's really, for the most part, worked out for them. And they, to be fair, though, they haven't really played what I would consider any stiff competition. I think that's going to change come Saturday. So I think that'll be more of a better test to see where Coach Olnicki and how this works against a more competitive defense. But making that competitive defense have to factor in a lot of different looks and things is probably in your advantage too. So I think he's a strategic guy. Everything I've seen for the most part I've been encouraged about.
Let's take a look at some individuals and how they played in this game. And I mentioned earlier the penalties, too many, didn't want to see them. They did have the one turnover. Again, I'm not going to go crazy over it. That was the Bo Prabhula pass. And when I went into this game last week talking about the things I wanted to see, I wanted to see some sustained drives. Mm-hmm. We saw that.
And I think that was deliberate, to be honest. I mean, look, Penn State could score at will. They could. They could have probably sent Wallace deep every play and probably hit a 50-yard touchdown if they wanted to do that. I think going back to why these games are helpful, maybe not necessarily from a fan perspective, but from a coaching and development perspective, is just getting sort of that live look. And I sort of equate it more with a varsity JV scrimmage and sort of seeing how your team, you know, how they're progressing and sort of get a sense of what works and what doesn't. And to your point, I thought it was more impressive and deliberate to establish whether or not Penn State was comfortable doing these sustained drives. And they were. And I think that's going to give them confidence moving forward.
And you saw, you know, starting with Drew Aller at quarterback, it was a clean game for him, essentially.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, his jersey looked pretty clean when he came off the sidelines. I think he completed over 80% of his passes, too. This is what you wanted to see. You wanted to see a dominant performance. That was something that was concerning against Bowling Green, and for the most part, we got that.
We didn't see the mistakes. We didn't see the interceptions. We didn't see, and I say this all the time, we didn't see the, gee, I think the receiver and quarterback weren't on the same page.
No, Steve. Yeah, no. I thought they looked crisp, a team coming off a bye as well. That's what you want to see. One thing, going back to the penalties, though, on defense, I really don't understand, you know, this lining up offsides and this repeated sort of jumping offsides. I mean, at this point, we've had three games. This is a problem. I don't know why that hasn't been cleaned up.
That's the one. And to James Franklin's credit in the post game, he did emphasize that. He doesn't want that. Obviously, no coach wants a penalty. But he didn't shrug it off, okay? It was, yes, this has got to be a point of emphasis. We can't have it. But the other things we were looking for, and we'll talk about this more when we come back from the break, which we're up against, is I want to talk to you about the fact that we had so many receivers catch passes in this game, which was something through the first two games. You have game one, Trey Wallace is the guy. You have game two, Tyler Warren's the guy. Don't they have any other guys who can catch the ball? And I really think it was a point of emphasis in the game. When we get back, I want to ask you your impression of the other receivers. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. I'm Jim, he's Steve. Quick reminder, if you are in State College, Tuesday evening, the Cafe 210 West, Downtown State College, we're going to be doing a live show. Show starts at 6 o'clock. Rogers Alexander will be with us. Us old-timers remember Rogers as part of some of those great Penn State teams. Some great food specials, beer specials. We got the Pulp Daddy Hazy IPA. If you're a beer drinker, you're going to love it. Trust me on that one. You are going to absolutely love it. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this, that the Pulp Daddy comes from a place, Greater Good Brewery. Now, the brewery's in Massachusetts, but it's a Penn Stater who started the brewery. They now sell their beer in Pennsylvania, which is fantastic. So check them out. All right. Steve, we were talking about the game on Saturday. A lot of great things. On the offensive side of the ball, a lot of folks were talking about first couple games, we were seeing only really two receivers excel, Trey Wallace and Tyler Warren. I put a lot of that on the fact of in the first two games, they just didn't throw the ball very often. There were not a lot of opportunities to spread it around. I think this was a game where they had the opportunity to do it. Mission accomplished, right?
I think so. I mean, I would add Amari Evans. I thought he played pretty well the first two games. I know he sometimes get called for penalties for pushing off, and he did drop a couple balls from what I remember. But he played well again. So I think you really have an established one and two receivers there between Trey Wallace and Amari Evans. But there are going to be formations where you're going to want to find a third. We heard coming into this season some hope and hype around Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming, and they hadn't really been much of a factor in the first two games, but again, getting those guys involved, both had multiple catches and Clifford had the touchdown. I think that's, again, good for their confidence. It's good for Clifford's confidence in them. And I think that's going to open up Kotelnicki's playbook because, you know, you want to be able to have some three receiver sets and do some things out of that. The other thing, again, that I think gets overlooked, particularly for Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming, is I believe they're both good blocking wide receivers. And when you have explosive running backs, that's the key to breaking one of those big runs. It's getting that second level block. And I don't think we should dismiss that. But the game, you know, it was Penn State knew that they could dictate whatever they wanted to do. And I think it was a point of emphasis to get both Clifford and Fleming the ball. And you know, to their credit, they did. And they were productive when they had their opportunities.
And I also think what's interesting with Omari Evans is he is establishing himself as a deep threat. So he had a 59-yard completion, had four receptions, averaged 29 yards per catch. So that, again, we keep talking about what is shown on tape. What are the next opponents going to see? Omari Evans on the field, you got to respect that he could beat you deep.
You do, and you have to respect a guy like Aller who can put the ball anywhere. I mean, that is something that we didn't really, I don't think, see Yursich take advantage of the past few seasons. Definitely not last year with Aller as the starter. And that has to put the defense to sort of have to defend all that. And I think there was an interesting stat during the game that they showed in terms of, you know, Aller's, you know, average completion in terms of yards. And that was significantly higher than it was a year ago. And, you know, if the team sort of picks up on the fact that, hey, Aller's only going to do these quick passes here because they don't really have any deep threats and they don't really have any confidence in their receivers, you know, that's a much easier team to defend against compared to now where, look, you have Trey Wallace, you have Omari Evans as deep threats. We're talking about utilizing, you know, Tyler Warren several places over the middle. And now potentially the emergence of Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming to be beyond blockers, threats to do something there if you're neglecting that third receiver. So one of the things that I think is really encouraging about this Penn State team is on the offense side, they're very balanced. You know, you have running threats, you have tight ends that can do things. And now we're starting to see some glimmers of hope here on the wide receiver position where, you know, coming into the year, that was a big question. Again, just want to put the caveat that don't know the level of competition has been that great yet, so we're going to find out a lot more. Illinois has some good covers, corners, and good safeties. So my sense is we're going to get a better sense of what the wide receiver room is and maybe hopefully what it isn't this Saturday when we play the game there.
And you mentioned, you know, Drew Aller being able to get the ball anywhere, but it feels like the biggest difference with him is just there's a confidence level, and this is probably going to turn into a chicken and the egg kind of conversation, Steve, is he more confident because the wide receivers are where they're supposed to be, okay? Or is it he's more confident, so the throws are going where they're supposed to? Is it Andy Kotelnicki scheming guys open so it's an easier process? I'm guessing really the answer is all of the above.
I think so. I mean, it's hard to say, you're trying to assign, you know, weightings at this as outsiders, you know, what it is, but I think they're all sort of self-reinforcing to your point. But it's encouraging. And, you know, that's what you want to have, build up these confidence heading into the meat of the schedule here. I think that's sort of the goal with these early games with lesser competition.
Yeah, it is. And when you play a game like this against a bad Kent State team, that's the thing you're looking for, those efficiencies. And before we move on, let's hit the running backs also, which you mentioned, it's a balanced team. I always find it interesting. It feels like they work very hard at making it even between Singleton and Allen. Number of carries. It seemed like at halftime, first half, Nick Singleton was getting more carries. Boom. Second half, we start seeing more Catron Allen. And I was saying that to myself and watching the game. And now looking at the end stats, don't you know they both had exactly 11 carries?
Yeah, but both are great running backs. And have the fact that both of them with sort of complementary skill sets, I just hope they both stay healthy And it's exciting to watch. And they're more likely to stay healthy when you sort of minimize the touches respectively. I thought Cam Wallace came in and played well. I hope he's okay. Again, as we're recording this, I don't know the status of his injury. It looked like an ankle. But he was somebody that looked promising if he was going to be forced to step up should something happen to the Singleton or Allen.
Here's an interesting little statistic. There were eight players who got carries in this game. Eight players. Including, you know, like Liam Clifford, Tyler Warren, each got a carry. What's interesting, Steve, is eight players got a carry. Eight players had at least one double-digit carry.
That's probably as much of an indictment as Kent State's defense. Again, I didn't see anybody resembling Jack Lambert or James Harrison out there. But, yeah, I mean, get credit. Make the most of your opportunities. We talked last week about not playing your opponent, playing to your potential. I think we saw more of that this week. I'll go back to Bowling Green. The one thing that was encouraging, I guess, if you had to sort of put a positive spin on it, about it being a closer than it should have been game, was that put some pressure on the offense to keep pace because the defense was really struggling at that point. So that really did sort of light a fire under Aller to really keep this team, you know, in the game. And to their credit, they did that. And, you know, at some point we're coming up again, the meat of the schedule. The fact that they were sort of already placed in that position where, you know, the defense has some struggles here, we have to keep up and do our part on the offensive end. You know, that could be one of the silver linings around what candidly was more of a cloud of a game.
And just to take a moment or two with Kent State in talking about these games, and again, MAC teams are not that bad. They can come up and bite you. Hello, Notre Dame. But in scheduling these games for these smaller schools, it's a payday for them. Penn State will pay Kent State to come in. And if you're a Kent State player, the last 2 weeks, you lose to Tennessee 71-0. You lose to Penn State 56-0. The last 2 weeks, it's 127-0. That's got to be tough for them to get out on the field when those are the results that you're getting.
It does. But look, I mean, Kent State they were few and far between, but some moments where they made plays and things they can point to where, you know, hey, if we were able to do this against Penn State, we should be able to do this and more against, from their standpoint, more competitive opponents coming up there in the MAC. They've made a lot of money for their school the past few weeks. And, you know, I think to your point, that's got to be discouraging as a player. You know, I've been on both ends of those blowouts, and honestly, neither one is really any fun to be on. Even when you're on the winning side, it's just, you know, both sides are sort of just looking for when that game clock is going to strike zero here. But you know, I there's a learning process there, and you know, you sort of feel bad for them watching them go through this, but they're making millions of dollars again for their school and for a program like that. That's probably not really relying on NIL money. I guess that's one way to consider it in their interest.
Well, the players aren't the ones who scheduled the game. Number one, and number two, it became much more difficult for them when their quarterback goes out. I think it was the second play from, yes, first series. I think second play from scrimmage. Deny Dennis Sutton ran him down. They even had their second quarterback injured. You're not going to have much depth on a team like Kent State to be competitive. So I feel bad for them in that situation.
I agree. I mean, I think we mentioned in an earlier show about, you know, one of the things that separates, I think, the teams at the very top of the spectrum here is, you know, there is really oftentimes very little, if any, drop off between the starter and the backup. And at programs like Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, that can be the motivating factor here. If you're the starter, is knowing that the guy behind you may even be better than you for whatever reason you're starting, versus, you know, when you go sort of further down the list there, where again, there is this dramatic drop off. And that's sort of, I think, what you see particularly even more dramatic in these MAC programs.
And I think, again, for those who question the scheduling of this game, Bowling Green, the previous game, Kent State, I think on the surface, at least, we look at them as comparable programs. They've both had success in the MAC conference. when you schedule these games years ahead of time, you don't know which one of them is going to be at, in the elite part of the MAC conference and who's going to be at the bottom.
And I think that's even more the case now with the transfer portal and NIL. I mean, if you're a MAC program and you've actually recruited a few guys that are really good players, rest assured that they're probably going to be playing somewhere else the following year, which is sort of an added challenge to those programs.
And it goes the other way, too, where a good player, quarterback for Bowling Green, Connor Bazelak, he came in this year and performed more than admirably against Penn State. All right, we'll be back in a second with quarter number four. We're going to start looking forward to Illinois when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. Steve, I'm playing injured here. Got the cold just trying to knock me out. But I'm hanging in there. You, what is it? You play hurt but not injured, or injured but not hurt? Which way is it?
I think you play hurt, not injured.
Okay, that's it. So I'm hurting. I'm not injured. So I'm going to gut it out because, Steve, I'm a gamer. All right. So I mentioned earlier, we're going to start looking forward. We've got Penn State, Illinois next week. Which all of a sudden is a very interesting game. We saw Illinois play Nebraska Friday night, which, by the way, I know, and I'm one of those folks who do not like college football games on Friday night. That's supposed to be the night for high school football. I was still in front of my TV watching Illinois Nebraska, okay? And if you're going to have a game, at least have a decent one on, and they did there. I was on the Nebraska hype train, and boy, did they disappoint me.
I mean, if you look at the Nebraska hype train, what, they beat Colorado? I mean, is that really any, like, major feat of accomplishment? I know that Colorado always gets a lot of hype, but you sort of saw that fizzle out after last year, and it's essentially the same team. I mean, if anything, Nebraska lost to Colorado last year. To Nebraska's credit, you know, they've improved their situation. I think the quarterbacks definitely helped them. But you know, Illinois going there and winning in a difficult road evening environment, I mean, that is good preparation for them coming to Happy Valley, which I'm encouraged to see that it's a night game. I think that's always worth at least 4 points for Penn State. And, you know, they're going to need that. I watch the weather because you look at the sort of the style contrast between Penn State and Illinois. You know, Illinois is a team that's, I sat through that 9 overtime loss. I'd be surprised if Bielema doesn't try something similar again. It's sort of a ground and pound versus, you know, Penn State under Franklin. I guess you'd say more of a finesse team. And that's where you see these contrasts in styles. It sort of reminded me of another game that I was watching at the same time as the Penn State, Kent State game was Michigan and USC. You know, Michigan, very much more of that Illinois mold, the ground and pound. I mean, the second half, they weren't even really attempting a pass. And you know, to their credit, I guess they wore USC down. And that's sort of the thing to, I think, watch as I think about what it's going to be like on Saturday. With Illinois exceeding expectations, you got a ranked opponent. And I think this will be a really good early test for Penn State, particularly in the trenches, to see what they have and you know, identify what maybe they don't have.
I think your analysis is spot on. If you're that Michigan in that Michigan USC game, Michigan was saying, this is what we want to do. This is the style of game we want to play.
They've been identified.
Yeah. Yes. And they dictated that. We saw that a year ago. It's ironic that you said it looked like in the second half, Michigan didn't even want to pass.
We were on the receiving end of that last year.
We've seen that. Where have we seen that before? So, yeah, you see that. And Illinois has that same identity, and they had that ability against Nebraska. But first of all, just getting back to the Illinois versus Nebraska game, I can't let this go without mentioning this to you, a Matt Rhule advocate that you are. You know, of course, the Nebraska fans are now turning on Matt Rhule.
That's fine. We can get him on a cheaper level. I'll take it. Bill O'Brien beat Michigan State, too. Don't forget that.
Yes. Good. And everyone knows I'm not a Bill O'Brien guy. I think he's doing incredible with what he's doing at BC. I think that's a great fit for him. But do you know what is Matt Rhule's record against ranked teams?
I don't.
2-20.
What's Franklin's?
Now this is ranked teams, not top five.
I know, I'm just asking.
Just I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Certainly better than his record against top five, which we know is really skewed by Ohio State and Michigan. But I think my point being more that when you're the home team, I think you're a little bit tougher on your coach, because overall, I think if you're a Nebraska fan, you should be pretty happy overall what's going on with your program, which has just been in the dregs for the last decade or so. Not only, you know, are you winning some games, yes, you're disappointed you lost to Illinois, but you've got a quarterback that I think is authentic and you could build around him.
I agree.
Yeah, so my point being, I think the home team fans just started getting tough on their own player, on their own coach. So let's now look forward. Next week, all of a sudden, this Illinois-Penn State game, I'm wondering if there's a few folks at Penn State who kind of wish they had made this one the whiteout. And I don't know if you saw James Franklin's press conference when he talked about this game. He did very intentional with this. Next week, I'm going to give you guys your headline. Next week, I want a whiteout energy. Okay. So he tweaked everyone with it. But going forward now, you haven't seen this point spread. As we record this, Illinois, Penn State coming up next Saturday night. What do you think the point spread is going to be?
Well, before Saturday, I thought it would be like 7.5. But now with Illinois winning, maybe 4.5?
It's 18.
18?
Yep.
Penn State an 18-point favorite? Wow, I would not take that.
I saw one site had 18, one site had 17.5. And, in the press box on Saturday, I asked a few people who I know – watch, you know, spreads and maybe lay down a couple dollars. And I asked the same question. And I had someone come back where they thought touchdown. Me personally, I thought a little bit, I thought it would be like 8 or 9 points. I asked someone else who I know really pays attention. He said 9, 10, I'll go with 9 points. So, you know, and these are people who are on the Penn State side of things. And yeah, 17.5 or 18, I think that spread's going to come crashing down as this week progresses. But go ahead.
But I would just say, like, it's the contrast in styles. And to me, that's one of the things that makes the college game much more interesting and exciting from a fan perspective than the NFL game. You know, and that's probably what's going to make it difficult to handicap this game for those in Las Vegas trying to set the line, is Penn State style of play compared with Illinois couldn't be any different in terms of a team that, you know, on offense really wants to air it out, has a lot of different weapons. Illinois is much more of a run-based first. And then Illinois has a tough defense. We're going to find out if Aller has time to take advantage of these receivers and utilize anything. Can the line open up holes for the running backs? You know, it's difficult to say right now, just given who Penn State's played and even who Illinois played. I mean, I don't know that Illinois played anybody with as much prolific offense as Penn State, so something's going to have to give. But I don't wager money on these games anyway, but I definitely wouldn't do it this week.
Well, I I don't like betting against Penn State, and James Franklin historically has been very good against the spread. I go all the way back to, you know, the 2016 season when they started the season 2-2 and finished it 11-2 with the conference championship. In that 9-game run of wins, do you know they beat the spread in all 9 games, Steve?
I believe hearing that fact a few times.
I sports gambling wasn't legal then, so I'm just saying I've heard that. As a casual observer. But now you go into this game, and that becomes, I think, the storyline for it is Illinois wants to make this a rock fight, reduce the number of possessions. But I think this is also why James Franklin talked about going into the Kent State game, that having some of these prolonged possessions, hold on to the ball, drive it, it's that complementary football where you don't go 3-and-out and throw your defense back out there, especially if Illinois is going to just ground and pound you.
Yeah, I think what's really important for Penn State, and we talked about this heading into the West Virginia game, is establishing a lead early. If you can get up on Illinois, take them away from what they're comfortable doing, which is running the ball, that will go a long way in maybe helping reach that betting outcome that a lot of Penn State fans want in terms of the point spread. Conversely, you know, if Illinois gets up early, sort of stays in the game, as someone who sat through that 9 overtime game there at Beaver Stadium, it could be a long day again. And I think you make a good point where that is Illinois' identity on offense. They want to not only run the ball, but run the clock and limit the chances that Aller and the Penn State offense are going to have to sort of keep pace with them. So you're going to have to make the most of your opportunities because they're probably going to be more limited than what you've seen.
That's a good point, and I like that early on. And we've all been to these night games at Penn State, and if Penn State could get up early, that ratchets up everything. The fan involvement, the team, we know they feed off that, Steve. So that can be a big difference. And they could also determine the style of play. All right. No, I didn't do this last week. It was Kent State. To get a prediction, just didn't care. Now I care. You know, point spread is 17.5 or 18 points. I need your prediction for the game. And I need a bold prediction for the game.
For point prediction, I'll go 27-20 Penn State. Bold prediction, I think Amari Evans is going to have 2 touchdowns.
Wow, that is bold. And, you know, I with the 20-point prediction for Illinois, and I don't know if I could take any assumptions from that. We didn't talk about it. How do you feel about Penn State's defense right now? And if Illinois is trying to play the ball control kind of game, would you be disappointed that they get to 20 points on the board?
No, I wouldn't be disappointed necessarily with giving up 20 points. I still have a lot of questions about the Penn State defense, just given the concerning first half we saw against Bowling Green. And just like that was a very incapacitated offense that we saw from Kent State, and there were still some tackling issues. The defense better have corrected those tackling concerns and lace their shoes up tight and strap on that chin strap, because that's what they're going to get. It's not going to be really anything looking to out scheme them or catch them off balance. It's just going to come and hit you in the mouth and, you know, find out, you know, are you a man or not? And, you know, at this point, they haven't really faced that. And look, in the past, there's been reasons for concern.
I love that kind of football talk. Man up, right, Steve? All right, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.